This is head coach of the LA Lakers, Luke Walton. You're listening to The Popcorn Machine on Lakers.com.
Hey everybody, welcome back to The Popcorn Machine on Lakers.com. Joey Ramirez here at the UCLA Health Training Center. And it's really been a month of growth for the Lakers. Brandon Ingram showing some things at point. The Lakers as a whole a lot better at on the offensive end. But you'll be happy to know that one thing is still the same, and that's that Pete Zayas cannot put a headset on the first try. Pete, you actually went back a few steps today. It took quite a while for you to get the headset on for today's pod.
So, you know, young players such as myself, sometimes it's a two steps forward, one step back type of thing. And today was that one step back, you know. You know, the Lakers will win like four in a row, and then they'll lose like two or three straight, like really bad losses. I just caught a couple L's right here.
Yeah, I think this was metaphorically the 9-game losing streak back in December, because there was a lot of struggling going on with this headset ordeal in today's. I'm not trying to pour this on.
No. I deserve all of it. Is it really? I'm glad there's no witnesses other than, you know, members of Lakers ownership and outside of the glass window watching me look like a fool. You know, but you know, aside from that,
it's okay. You're not paid to teach people about headsets. You're paid to teach people about basketball.
Let's talk Lakers, Joey.
Let's talk Lakers, Pete, because the Lakers are on a 5-game winning streak, and the team has looked kind of like a different team all of a sudden. They've had a lot of their success stem from the defensive end for most of the season. And then this last streak, they are second in points per game. I think they're putting about 126 a night. What are you seeing from the offense? God, stumbling over myself like you put it on a headset. What are you seeing from the offensive end?
I love how you take your mistake and still put it back on me.
That's what a pro does.
That's right. Absolutely.
I just build upon yours.
That's right. I appreciate that. We're a good team, Joey. So on the offensive end, a couple of different things. In transition, and I recently made a video about this, they're really committing to their principles. They have five-out spacing principles, which is going to be the spots that guys run to. So you want more spots as a coach. You want more spots for guys to run to than there are players. So there aren't five spots to run to. There are about seven or so.
Yeah.
But on the perimeter, you got your two corners, your two wings, which is the free throw line extended, and then up top. So you want to fill those deep corners first and then the wing positions behind that while your bigs are rim running, right? You want one big running to the front of the rim. And usually your slower big, which is going to be a Brook Lopez type of guy, is trailing. And Lopez fits that spot well because he can shoot that trailing three.
Right.
So behind that concept, like, they're really committing to running hard to those spots and getting out in transition. Everybody's rebounding. KCP has turned into like Dennis Rodman over the last month, like,
wild,
which,
right?
Was not anything that I anticipated at all. And so, like, having guards that can rebound, obviously having Lonzo back is huge in that. Josh Hart was part of that before he got hurt. So having everybody being able to rebound and then everybody being able to fill every spot of transition, like, how hard is that to guard when you don't know if Julius Randle is going to be a wing or a trailer or a rim runner or a ball handler on a play? Then in the half-court offense, they're not doing anything particularly complex, but they are going through their bigs a bit more. And part of that is due to injuries, both to Lonzo before and now Brandon afterward. And then when Brandon was playing, he was just killing it as the on-ball guy. And we got news today that he's going to be out for at least a week, and that's going to hurt for sure.
Yeah, that's disappointing, especially because of the lack of depth at the wing at this point, which I'm sure we'll get to. One thing I wanted to highlight, though, was the play of Isaiah Thomas, who is a figure that came in very polarizing to fans. Is he gonna demand a bunch of shots? Is he gonna kind of erase some of the progress that guys like Lonzo and Ingram have made running point? And it seems like he's fit in pretty well so far. What are your thoughts on Isaiah?
He's been exactly what I've hoped he was gonna be. I was a little more bullish on him than maybe some other folks were.
Right.
And so we talk about positions, right? Point guard, shooting guard, et cetera, et cetera. But in reality, there aren't positions in basketball. It's more things that need to happen, guys that need to be able to do certain things. Do you have the skill sets represented within the five guys that you have on the court?
Right.
And how that pertains to Isaiah Thomas is they did not have a really skilled on-ball pick-and-roll scorer. Mm-hmm. And when he's right, and he's still in the process of getting healthier and all of that, but when he's right, he's one of the best in the league at that. And we've seen flashes of that. So what's happened is one area that was a weakness, and this is something where teams will game plan, right? Hey, we know you don't have any pick and roll ball handler scorers. So we're going to put you in those situations as often as possible, take everything else away, let you do that. Well, now you can't do that with the Lakers when Isaiah Thomas is on the court. When him and Lonzo play together, like their efficiency numbers, their net rating, sky high. Because you have so many different skill sets represented to where a defense just can't be like, hey, we know you're weak at this, so we're going to let you do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. I also like the chemistry that he has with Ivica Zubac, a guy who is making the most of his sort of chance here, a guy who is kind of buried on the depth chart, spent some time in the South Bay, and... God, they just look so good working together. I don't. You can help me out here, but to me, it seems like just Zubac is a much better screener than he's been in years past. And Isaiah, like you're saying, is the type of guy who knows how to operate off those screens. And even if he doesn't have the explosion to get to the rim like he was last year when he was a borderline MVP candidate, he's kind of tailored his game a little bit, where he's pulling up off the dribble, both for threes and inside the arc. And then when the defenses adjust to that and start sending doubles at him or some other form of defensive attention, he's able to locate Zubac rolling to the rim. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, no, absolutely. The thing about having a guy like Isaiah Thomas is there's about six or seven different ways that you can defend the pick and roll, mm-hmm. and there's a way to beat any of them. Right. And there are some that, like, they're all weak to or vulnerable to something. And Isaiah Thomas can help you beat any one of those coverages. A guy like Zubac, I don't think it's coincidence that he's emerged. For one, he's getting playing time, right? So who knows if maybe he would have done better, but he didn't look that great prior to Isaiah Thomas coming.
Yeah, that's fair.
And I think that he really needed a guy like that pick and roll type of scorer, because IT is more of a scorer first off of the ball screen, and then will pass secondarily off of that. And there are some plays where he takes a forced shot, you know, when he probably should have given it up. Yeah. But a guy like Zoo rolls hard to the rim. He can finish above the rim. There have been a couple of really sweet lobs. IT does a good job of handling traps and secondary defenders, especially for a guy his size. And so he'll, like, look away a defender and then give it to Zoo, rolling and has his hands ready. Zoo's always done a nice job of keeping his hands high when he catches a pass like that. He doesn't dip it back down low. He catches it high and finishes high. So I think those things are related with Zubac's emergence.
And you and I both love the way that Isaiah is used as a screener. Just a 5'9 guy, shortest guy in the NBA, going around and just apparating behind people and setting a screen. Do you get that reference? Do you get apparate?
Is that a Harry Potter thing?
It is.
I'm halfway through. Should I know that by now?
Well, you gotta tell me where you're at.
Okay, so there was the Prisoner of Azkaban is the third one.
Yes.
Is that it? I watched the next one. Is that Goblet of Fire?
That is Goblet of Fire.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah.
So you saw the flu powder.
I did see the flu powder, yeah. So is that the...
Like apparating is like, it's like kind of like a more efficient way of flu powder. You like pop up, you know, you can just disappear and appear somewhere else. Nice. Teleportation, basically.
That would be a good skill to have under your belt.
Yeah. I'm just glad that you're making progress on this area.
I'm trying, man. I'm trying. Yeah, I guess when you're 5'9", amongst a bunch of trees, you know, like, that, it can seem that way, right, where a guy doesn't know. There's that one on Dwight Powell. I don't know if you remember, we talked about that, where, you know, Powell got hit and he didn't even see IT there, so he kind of throws his hands very dramatically in the air. But there's also a lesson to be learned from that, both from us from fans' perspective, and if there's, you know, high school players listening to this, things like that, you don't have to be big to set a good screen, and you don't have to, like, you don't have to be a big guy to understand the value of doing that, you know. And IT is a veteran that knows how to play. Those are the types of things that are the practical on-court manifestations of that concept of just knowing how to play.
Yeah, and going off of that, one of the best screeners in this game is Steph Curry. And that just goes to show that, you know, you could kind of flip it on its head. Like, if you're a guy who has, like, a lot of gravity and can demand a lot of offensive attention, you can flip that on the defense and use your skill set as a screener, throw a back screen unexpectedly, or, like, I mean, the way that Golden State just uses pick and rolls where they'll have KD handle and Steph set a screen, and that's so difficult to guard.
That's something that, one thing that a lot of coaches will tell their shooters is, if you want to get open, set good screens. Mm. Because what happens is, if you make good contact, a lot of times what you do with the shooters, you'll have him set back screens. Yeah. Meaning he'll be coming up from a lower position, he'll kind of sneak up behind a defender, say a big man defender, and set that solid screen. Well, what happens is, your teammate, your big, rolls hard to the basket, and it's like, oh, you know, we got to cover for him. So two guys have his attention
for
a moment, and then that screen setter, that shooter, pops out and he's open off of it. We see that with Steph all of the time, and then it works in the opposite direction where, oh crap, Steph is open, and that draws the attention of a second guy, and then the screener slips it for a layup.
Yep, for sure. Like we said, when you talk about the wings are on this team are very thin, Pete. Brandon Ingram is out for another week, as you mentioned. Josh Hart is, you know, hopefully we'll see him again this season. There's a possibility we won't. And Corey Brewer, of course, was waived. So that leaves Kentavious Caldwell-Pope as the only true wing left on this roster. Last game, we saw Kyle Kuzma play a bit of the three. I think we saw a little bit of Travis Ware at the three. I don't know if you were seeing
I think he played some more four.
I think maybe he just got mismatched on a few possessions.
Yeah, there were, because they were switching everything. Yeah, by the time he was in the game, they had Julius at the five, and they were switching everything,
So, first of all, first impressions of Kyle and KCP kind of playing a little bit out of position.
So
obviously Kyle's a little more so out of position.
Right, yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, KCP, the Lakers have quite effectively run some three-guard lineups, and KCP has, you know, borne some of that burden. And the difference defensively between a two or a three is not that significant.
Mm-hmm.
And the same is true on the offensive end, although there are, in the Lakers' offense, the two-spot runs off of a lot more screens than the three does. But the difference between the three and the four, and I asked Luke about this today, is very significant in that at the three spot on both ends of the court, you have more on-ball responsibilities. Yeah. You're going to be a ball handler using pick and rolls rather than being the screen setter on offense, more frequently at least. You're going to be the guy running off of pin downs and things like that for catch and shoot opportunities. And defensively, same thing's true, right? You're defending more ball handlers that rather than screen setters, and your help side responsibilities are totally different. So I would argue that the difference between the three and the four is probably the most difficult in the NBA in terms of your responsibilities. I could be wrong on that, but I think there's a greater difference in terms of that than any other two positions that are next to each other. I think four and five, you have similar responsibilities. One and two, you have similar responsibilities in today's game at least. But I think three and four is kind of where you go from perimeter player to big man, or at least a hybrid of one.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point. And going off that point, you have a rookie kind of trying to toe that line right now in Kyle Kuzma. A guy who, when he was first drafted and came in here, he was asked a lot, well, what positions can he play? And he says, well, I can definitely play the four, and I can play the three. And I remember asking him to further, you know, kind of clarify that, like, do you think that you're going to, like, be able to play the three as a rookie? Or, like, is this going to be a long-term project for you? Like, it's very hard to play the three, especially in the NBA, where you have, like, LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Kawhi Leonard, some of the best players are at that position, small forward. And he said pretty honestly, like, no, this is gonna be a work of progress for me. Like, I don't expect to play the three much as a rookie, but eventually I know I'll get there. So kind of being thrown into that now by necessity with all these wings down. How are we feeling about Kyle's skill set and about his first game playing some three?
Well, I think it's gonna be tough, and I think he had a tough time of it in that San Antonio game. I also think it's compounded. Like, I think his legs are probably pretty heavy right now.
It seems so.
Yeah, he hasn't scored the ball particularly efficiently for a while now. Yeah.
And just to interrupt you real quick on something that you said yesterday, that he's kind of not really given himself much of a break on that end. He's taken some tough shots.
I think, you know, this is something that Luke has mentioned this, and it's not exclusive to Kyle, but he is the... Because Lonzo is not so... you don't have issues with Lonzo's shot selection, right? That's not the type of player that he is. But this is something Luke has mentioned about Julius and even Brandon in the past, has been when you've got these really talented guys that have always been, you know, the best of the best for their age, their inclination is that when things go poorly, is to try and do it themselves and to try to, like, take over. And it's kind of like quicksand, right? Where, like, the more you struggle, the more you sink.
Yep, yep.
And I think that's where Kyle is right now, where he's trying to take these really difficult shots that he's not incapable of making, but they're low percentage shots, and he's not getting as many shots within the flow of the offense. So in terms of how it pertains to the three spot, I think it's something he has to do out of necessity. But if rewind back to his days at Utah, where Larry Krystowiak, former Milwaukee Buck, is the coach, he runs a very old school type offense, and Kuz was very much a traditional power forward there with perhaps not so traditional power forward skill set, which I think is probably why he dropped a little bit. I don't think that that offense was particularly suited to his skills the way that he is in the NBA.
Yeah, I've heard that as well.
Yeah, and so, but within that, the way he played four at Utah is such a departure from the three. Mm-hmm. I'm not surprised at all to hear that he says, yeah, it's going to be a steeper learning curve because it's such different responsibilities.
Right, right. Like you're saying, yeah. So he played the four in college, not like how he's playing the four in the NBA, and now he's being asked to play the three in the NBA, which is...
He's tired, right?
Right, yeah. Right, yeah. While having those heavy legs, which is going to be so much different. Yeah, I totally understand what you're saying. What do you think is the biggest challenge at the three for Kyle? Taking it in a vacuum, you know, without the heavy legs, just the biggest difficulty for a guy of his skill set as a rookie at the three, is it defensively? Is it offense? What he's going to be asked to do? What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's on the defensive end. Yeah. I think that he tends to skip in his defensive stance rather than slide his feet. Mm-hmm. And what happens when you skip rather than slide is that you're prone to change of direction. Because if you're skipping, there's a brief moment in time where both feet are off of the floor. Right. And you cannot change your own direction if both feet are off of the floor. So Rudy Gay took advantage of him a couple of times, and a couple of other guys, I think DeJounte Murray had a possession or two against him where he's going to be prone to crossovers, and he's going to be prone to the footwork on like defending pick and rolls is different than what he would have defending the screen setter, mm-hmm. fighting over the top of screens and mm-hmm. doing some of the things like that that Luke wants to do. I think probably what we're going to see, and Luke did this to great success at the end of the San Antonio game, the Lakers had stopped switching quite so much over the last month, maybe 6 weeks or so. I think they're probably going to go back to that while they're shorthanded like this with Kuz playing that spot, because that eliminates some of the how to defend screens.
I was just about to ask you about that, because it would seem that switching everything would make it easier for a guy playing out of position to kind of, you know, get his bearings.
I mean, it's the simplest thing, right? Like, it makes sense to anyone, right? Like, where, you know, any screen, just switch it and right. be fine. Obviously, that can lead to mismatches, and Luke doesn't love doing that if Julius isn't at the five, mm-hmm. but that may be something that he just has to do. And it, for what it's worth, I think in the times where Brook Lopez has been in that position, I think he's acquitted himself fairly well, all things considered, but it's definitely less than ideal.
Yeah, for sure. Let's round out with Lonzo Ball, who has shot 44% from three-point range over his last 15 games. What are your general thoughts about Lonzo? The big question that most people are asking is, well, what's more real, the first 25 games where he shot 27% or these last 15 where he shot 44% from three? What are you thinking? Does it even matter at this point?
No, that's a good question. Both of those are good questions. I don't think he's a 44% three-point shooter from here on out, but I do think he's closer to that than the, you know, 24% three-point shooter he was at the beginning of the season. You know, when Lonzo was in college, he was not shooting college-length threes a lot of the time.
Right, yeah.
He was bombing from distance. And I think that, you know, at the beginning of the year, I don't know, he's a guy, he's so unique in that the pressures that are on him, some of which are self-inflicted with the, you know, LeVar and all of that, but like he's under a microscope that's just different than any other guy, any other rookie. You know?
Absolutely.
And I think that, you know, there was a lot thrown at him at the beginning of the season. I think he's a much more confident guy. There were times where he would catch the ball and then you'd see him like tap his right foot a couple of times and hesitating, like, should I shoot this mm-hmm. or should mm-hmm. I not? We don't really see that anymore. He shoots the ball when he's open, and when he's not, he doesn't.
Yeah.
All of the moving, he's got a lot of moving parts to his shot, which can probably lead to streakiness in both directions, and we may be seeing just the positive upside of that. But earlier in the year, the different moving parts of his shot were not in sync, and now they're in sync. And part of that's because he's not hesitating. Part of that's just because this is normal to him mm-hmm. now. This is not something that's new. And I wish we wouldn't be so impatient with rookies, you know?
I agree with that. You and I have talked in the past about reputation in the NBA trailing reality, in the sense that there are guys who have made like all defensive teams based on reputation alone. And really, they've taken a step back. But just because everybody thinks they're a great defender, they've been called a great defender their entire career, they end up getting another award. And three-point shooting seems to kind of fill in that vein, especially with Lonzo. You see a lot of, probably most teams, still going under screens on Lonzo, still helping off of him to go deal with Julius in the paint and leaving him wide open for a kick out. Do we think that that's going to be changing anytime soon? Are teams going to start sticking to Lonzo, or... Or are they just going to keep daring him to shoot?
That's a great question. And I think that we're going to start seeing them changing that. In fact, the last play of the game that was kind of the clincher for the Lakers in San Antonio, Patty Mills went over the screen on Lonzo. And that was one of the first times that San Antonio did that. Yep. And what Lonzo did properly was he attacked it. And Julius settled into the window between Mills and I think Powell was the big man defender. Mm-hmm. Lonzo hit him, Julius went to work, and then it was ball game. Sprinkled some salt on it, and the game was over, right?
The salt so, was good.
Yeah, and so I'm curious to see how Lonzo deals with that, because some of what he's going to need to do off of that is scoring himself. Mm-hmm. Like, if guys go under screens, you have to be able to be a scoring threat. But if they go over screens, you got to be able to be a scoring threat at the rim.
Right.
Because what happens is when you go, if they go over the screen, there's going to be a split second where the guard is behind him. And he needs to be able to seal him behind him, put him in jail, mm-hmm. and then attack the rim off of that if the big does not contain properly. On that particular play, Powell committed to Lonzo, so the right play is to Julius. But what if the big doesn't commit to Lonzo? And that, to me, that is the next step in Lonzo's evolution, is being able to score out of those type of situations. I don't think it happens effectively until next season, because I think he needs a lot of technique work, and that usually happens over the summer rather than being, you know, mid-season type thing.
Yeah, that's definitely something to keep an eye on. Last thing before we go, Pete. Blazers in town tonight. They're on a 6-game streak. Lakers are on a 5-game streak. Lakers doing theirs mostly through offense. Blazers through defense, plus Damian Lillard just a crazy man right now. Give me a quick thought on the Blazers.
Yeah, watch a little bit of tape on the Blazers today. They're good. They're good. I like they got a kid coming off the bench, Zach Collins, that I like, that I think is a good, smart defender. He's a rookie, but I think he's helped them out defensively, him getting minutes. He's a good verticality type of defender, good positionally. You know, they're a team that, like, just like you said, they've, and Luke mentioned this today too, where they've committed on the defensive end, and they've just got enough firepower offensively to work through any issues that they might have on that end, just in terms of individual talent. You know, Lakers haven't lost a home game since January 5th. It's March 5th.
That's crazy, dude.
2 months.
Two whole months.
Now they've been on the road. There's been an All-Star break and whatnot, but this would be, if they win, that'd be the 9th straight home win.
That is crazy. Yeah. Man. I don't think anybody saw that coming. Yeah.
And it would be the 9th straight win with Lonzo in the lineup.
that might even be more crazy. Lonzo's had that. Wow.
It's been fun, man.
Oh, a lot of fun. And like you said, we'll see what Lonzo does for the rest of the year. We'll see how he develops over the offseason. We'll see if an offseason is enough for Pete Zayas to learn how to put on a headset. Maybe that's what we need, is for Pete to just get in the gym.
A lot of technique work, right?
Yeah, a lot of technique work.
A lot of technique work. Just, like you said, 2 steps forward, 1 step back.
All right, Pete, it's always fun talking to you, man.
Likewise, brother. Thank you.
Oh, did he put Person in the popcorn machine?
Yeah, Person ran at him out of control, and he paid the price.